You're listening to the Support Ops Hangout, episode 35, called Downtime Happens, So Be Prepared. This is a Support Ops Hangout, a weekly discussion that helps you deliver a better support experience to your customers. If you've got customers, this is your show. One note before we dive into this episode, we just launched a new way to ask us questions on the show. So if you've got something you want us to tackle, head over to supportops.co/ask and let us know. Now on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Support Ops Hangout. This is our weekly discussion that helps you deliver a better support experience to your customers. We're live every Monday at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Chase Clemens. You might notice if you're watching the video feed of this that my setup is completely crazy because I'm getting moved around in my wife's studio. So this is the corner that I got this week. Hopefully next week I'll be back in my own little spot, so it'll be a little bit clearer. But that's what's going on with me. Everyone else has beautiful smiling faces. Again, if you're watching the video, if you're watching the audio, just take my word for it. I wouldn't lie to you. I'd never lie to you. They're awesome. The smiles are just happening. So let's go ahead and meet our just amazing crew of support pros. Carolyn, how are things out in Buffer?
They're great. I was this weekend in Tahoe failing to learn how to snowboard. Really, really, really failing. But it was fun, so life is good.
You know, I know a guy that knows how to ski, so he probably knows how to snowboard, right, Jeff? Do you know how to snowboard?
I'm a skier.
Oh, so not the same.
Nope. It's slightly
See, that's,
different.
That's my entire knowledge of winter sports right there. So what's speaking of, how are you, Jeff?
I'm good. I'm getting ready to go to Tahoe. I'll be in Tahoe starting next week.
Oh, if we had like fancy graphics or something, we could do like you and Carolyn just passing in the air, like the planes passing as you're going and she's leaving.
That's okay. Tahoe is a safer place for it.
Yeah, and our budget's cheap, so yeah. You know, it happens. And then last but certainly not least, the other Chase, as he was called this week in our base camp project, Dr. Chase Livingston. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
See, always just straight and to the point. I love it. So yeah, let's talk about what we're talking about this week. This week is all about the dreaded downtime event, right? So every app is going to go down at some point. We all have, I think, right, gang? If you haven't, then you're in for it. It's going to happen sooner or later. That's just how Murphy's Law works. No matter how good your team is, it's really inevitable. You're going to go down. Your app's going to go down at some point. So it's best just be prepared for this entire thing. So with this episode, we're going to look at the best practices for preparing for that so that when it happens, you've already got a game plan in place and can just execute on that. We'll also talk about what to do after it's all over, because what happens after your downtime event is just as important as how you handle it during the actual downtime event itself. So that's our show topic. Let's go ahead and dive into some of the questions around it. Carolyn, we're going to start with you on this one. Does Buffer have any kind of plan in place for when the Buffer app goes down?
Plan is a little strong. We unfortunately had an event not that long ago in October that was bigger than downtime, but it sort of gave us a little bit of a model for what we might do. We always tweet immediately. That's usually step number one. And then depending on the severity and the length of it, we might also write a blog post or send an email, but those are all sort of as the length of the situation goes on or the severity.
So no formal plan in place. It's kind of just more we're going to do X, Y, and Z because we know these things work in regardless of if it's a downtime event or a security breach or any other thing that might be negative, right?
Yeah, that's the during, yeah. It's just to kind of get out whatever news we have and try to make accurate estimates. Sometimes that's not so easy. But, yeah, try and get a sense from the engineers
Accurate estimates. Yeah. When you figure out how that works, let me know. Most of my estimates tend to be off by plus or minus, infinity. It's just horrible. Jeff, with Wistia, do you have any specific plan in place if Wistia ever goes down? Because that, you've got companies that the videos are almost their lifeblood. You know, these videos are on the front page of their websites. They're there to convert customers when customers can't watch them. That's kind of big. So does Wistia have any kind of plan in place for if it goes down?
We do have a communication process, something that we are supposed to do if that were to happen, if the worst were to happen. Now, the problem is that what you just described is like our version of a nuclear disaster, right? All of our customers losing all of their videos on all of their sites. The problem is that there are emergencies that fall all along the continuum between everything is fine and everything is on fire. So yes, this process would be perfect, I think, for when things are completely screwed. The problem is deciding in the moment whether what we're experiencing is kind of screwed and therefore should we follow the process or whether it's totally fine. So sort of, I guess, is my answer.
Yeah. Is that at that moment right there where you're deciding, is this like a nuclear Armageddon, Chicken Little world, the sky is falling? That moment when you decide, is that something that's just a judgment call by someone on your team? Or is there like a checklist that you say, all right, if it meets these three criteria, that's when we start doing this downtime process? Like how is that decision made right then about which way to go?
Well, that's a great question, Chase. We do have a definition of a critical support issue. Now, I made up this definition, so it's pretty bad, but we do have one, which is it affects more than a third of our user base. So if everyone's videos go down, that's everybody. It's timely, right? Meaning that it's not sort of an ongoing issue that we've always been dealing with, right? If something doesn't work in a specific browser, we don't have to message about that constantly. That's sort of an ongoing thing. And then the third piece is that it involves what we would consider core functionality, which differs for every application and every product. So the decision tends to be made because every issue tends to fall along that continuum that I was talking about. It's very rare that you get something that's like 100% red alert. The decision tends to be made between myself and between the engineer or developer that says, hey, by the way, here's the issue, but here's the cause of the issue. So if the cause of the issue is really basic, straightforward, and we're going to have it fixed immediately, the messaging is much different than we didn't see this coming. This could take days to sort out, right? So there's a lot of variables in figuring out how you're going to go about messaging this stuff.
Yeah, and listeners, if it feels like we're kind of hem-hawing around and being like, hey, this is a continuum and there's lots of stuff going on, it's how it is. You know, when something happens to negatively impact your customers, if it's one customer, that customer is experiencing a downtime event. If it's all of your customers, then all of them are. So, you know, the things that we'll talk about, use your best judgment about when to put some of the action ideas that we have into play, you know? So just keep that in mind as we keep talking about it. Chase Livingston with Automattic, you know, big company here, bigger than the rest of us anyways. Any formal plans in place for downtime events, that kind of thing?
There's definitely some communication things that happen, but a lot of the kind of the triage and stuff would obviously be handled by our developers. We do have a system that we call the happiness call for help, which is just an easy way for somebody to be able to send a quick message to, you know, all the happiness engineers in the company to kind of let them know what's going on and tell them, you know, we may need all hands on deck if it's something super serious, and it allows somebody, you know, one person to be able to get that out in a matter of minutes. But other than that, it's just kind of, you know, working between, you know, our different teams to figure out how to best to handle the situation.
So the happiness call, I love that, because you're kind of like buffer, like every, even negative stuff. You're like, hey, it's a happiness call. Who doesn't like getting woke up by those at 2 a.m. in the morning? is that something that's just kind of like a one-click thing that your team created? Is that something that like as an off the shelf kind of thing? Like, can you kind of give us some details about that?
Yeah, it's just something we created and kind of built into some of our internal tools that allows probably our support lead, Andrew, would be the one who would usually send that out to everybody. But it's open and available for anybody to do.
Nice. And, you know, the thing that keeps coming up between all three of us, all four of us so far, is kind of the communication first, right? We talked about downtime events being all about the communication process. So we'll switch to Carolyn on this one because, you know, you had a good example recently with everything that happened with Buffer a couple of months ago. How, when something goes wrong, how does your team communicate and keep everybody on the same page about the latest updates and things?
Yeah, so we're totally distributed. So we're kind of used to that anyway. So we use HipChat. And we use HipChat a lot for what's happening right now, and we use email a lot for asynchronous communication, like, this is what's up. So the teams often have to talk amongst themselves about things that don't concern everybody, so we have sort of two separate HipChat rooms for that. One is, hey, we're just talking, and this is where we, like, ask questions about this customer, that customer, and it's all very casual. And then we have one that's like, this is just news for Happiness Heroes. This is just what you need to know today when you sign online. But yeah, we use probably email the most to keep in touch with everybody. When we had our hack in October, everybody who was awake was on a Google Plus Hangout because everything was happening so fast that it was sort of important for everybody to just know all at the same time without figuring out how to word your emails. But in general, yeah, we rely on email the most, probably.
Yeah, that's one of those, as I was kind of prepping for this show, I was looking at how other companies handle downtime events and that kind of stuff. Like, and it seems to be that first initial moment of somebody discovers something's wrong and then lets everybody else know about it. It's kind of a critical point. Chase Livingston, you talked about how you've got the happiness call that goes out. The one that comes to mind is Groove recently, you know, a popular customer support app went down, and they said it was something like 11 hours before they realized what was going on because they were asleep. So, Jeff, when it comes to Wistia, you know, you're a local team. You're not really spread out to cover time zones or anything. If something goes down in the middle of the night, what process does your team have in place to let you know that something's wrong rather than having to be woken up and be like, hey, you know, you need to check your email because we're down?
How did they sleep for 11 hours? I still am not sure I completely follow the facts on that story.
I should be fair. I don't know if Alex was asleep for 11 hours or anything like that. I do remember that there was a significant amount of time between when it went down for users on the other side of the world and when they finally found it.
Yeah.
I'll have a link to that article in the show notes and specific numbers on that. But yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah. Sorry. So what was the question again? I was caught up in the fact that I remember reading this article and thinking to myself, how does someone sleep for 11 hours? Because I want to know. I would love to sleep for 11 hours. That would be great.
So maybe that's the trick with Wistia. Maybe you just don't sleep whenever something does go down, you're already awake. Like, yeah. So
now I remember the question. Right. Now I remember the question. Yeah. It is that we don't sleep. It's that we have Ben, who has been with Wistia since very, very early days, who really does not sleep. He has himself set up such that he gets the notifications in the middle of the night if anything were to happen, and he takes action on them. I think the first thing is that we've thought through that problem, and we've experienced it, and we're now fixing it. We have redundancy for a lot of things that, like, could go bad. So the things that would be like red alert type of instances, we have backups for those, so that if one service that we're using, right? So like let's look at the Groove issue. The email that he sent out, he clearly blames third-party services for the problem. Let's just call a spade a spade. If we rely on third-party services, we're going to do our damnedest to make sure we have a backup for those if humanly possible. There are some you can't. I get it. But I think that they, you know, Ben and the engineering team have done a great job of identifying the ones that we can, and therefore those are not as big of an issue for us. What else do we do in the middle of the night? I mean, I don't know. We're, like you said, we're a pretty small and local team. So I think we're honest with folks that if something does happen in the middle of the night, we're just going to try to get to it as quickly as we can, hopefully within 11 hours.
And I was just pulling it up. And like I said, I'll make sure to put this in there because I do think at the you know, once everything was done, Groove did a pretty good job of at least keeping everyone up to date on what was going on. But yeah, it was, and the quote here is, the app has been down for 11 hours. That's a long time to be down. I mean, you know, Chase Livingston, WordPress is running something like 20% of the web. And I know that automatic isn't, you know, WordPress.com isn't that 20%. And you get off a little bit easier because, you know, WordPress.org installations are kind of their own deal. But looking at WordPress.com, is there any feasible way that you could imagine your app being down that long without anybody noticing?
I doubt it. We have our head operations guy, Barry, is amazing. And, you know, we have data centers all across the world. And so I think it would be very tough. I mean, he would know about it, you know, immediately and, you know, be able to reroute traffic or something like that. So I don't see that being a problem. And plus we have, you know, operations people and support people, you know, in different time zones across the world as well. So usually there's always at least a few people online at any given time.
I think just to jump in, like going back to the idea of this continuum thing, there are certain parts of Wistia that have broken for 11 hours before. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, without a doubt, that has happened. So I'm not saying that anybody's service is perfect, and ours certainly isn't. But I do think that if like our website was down for 11 hours, right? Like, you know, the very limited protocols we do have in place would at least make it so that we would get communication out pretty quickly on that.
Yeah, and just to kind of give all of our listeners some actionable things here, some of the things that we do at Basecamp, right? We have checks that are happening in our own trial accounts, demo accounts, that kind of thing. So if and those checks are happening from all over the world through Pingdom, which is this just cool little app that you can use for these kind of things. So we have checks are happening from France or Russia or here in the States that are pinging specific parts of the Basecamp app, looking, are they up, are they down? And the moment something triggers that it's down, you get an automatic change in the status page, which is great because you don't have to go, oh, did I flip the status page into a problem mode when this happened? It happens automatically, so we're not having to worry about that. That's one less thing to worry about. It's also sending out PagerDuty. I don't know if the rest of you have ever used the PagerDuty app. It's absolutely fantastic for sending out SMS alerts and calling your phone and basically like blowing up your phone, letting you know something's wrong. So you'll get those 2 a.m., 3 a.m. calls when something goes down, which is a pain, you know, if you're an operations engineer, if you're on support. But when those calls go out, it's because the app is affected and your customers are affected. So I think they're worth it. I'll put links to PagerDuty and Pingdom in the show notes because they're just, I think those are some things that you can do right away just to kind of get ahead of when your app goes down or parts of your app go down. Talking about, so your app has gone down or parts of it has gone down. Carolyn, what's the first channel that Buffer lets everyone know about it? Are you sending out an email first? Or are you letting people know on Twitter first or Facebook or that kind of thing? Like, what's your go-to channel to let everyone know, hey, something's wrong and we're taking a look?
Yeah, it's Twitter. We learned we still haven't fixed in the hack situation was that we also reply to a lot of, you know, like app mentions on that same handle, so mm-hmm. anybody who follows us will see it, but people who just go to our site, go to our Twitter page, won't necessarily see it because they'll see a slew of replies before they'll. I mean, it's like crazy to scroll for days to find the tweet. So we're trying to figure that out, probably with either a status page or right now we're just going to have like a status Buffer Twitter, which is like kind of a band-aid. But yeah, I mean, Twitter's so immediate and it's so easy and it's so fast and it's such a good way to get in touch with people and then there's a link to what you shared. Yeah, we use Twitter first. And we rarely use any other mediums actually. We wouldn't send an email or put a banner on the site or, Facebook maybe, but we wouldn't probably take those next steps unless it was somewhere along the spectrum that was not you know, pretty normal.
Yeah, you know, looking back at the kind of the security breach that you guys had in October, right? October of last year, I think. You obviously, you know, the Twitter responses were absolutely fantastic. You're replying to individual emails that are coming in during this downtime, during this, not really downtime, but during this event that's happening. At what point did Joel and the rest of the team go, you know, hey, look, we need to A, send an email, and we need to B, get up a blog post so we can have a central place? Like, was that 30 minutes into it, an hour into it? Like, how long could a person go before they really need to send an email to everyone or put up a blog post about it?
That's a good one. Yeah, we usually start to, I mean, we usually don't get answers at first because the engineers are busy fixing whatever it is or investigating whatever it is. So I'm usually like, hey guys, I'm going to tweet. So what should I say? Anybody have any thoughts about like what we might say to customers? And like finally somebody answers me, and that's usually when if I'm having to like do that over and over, then obviously there's a bigger situation than just what we can share on Twitter. So it was super useful during the hack because like you said, the link to our blog post ended up being sort of like the place to find out everything. And what was nice about that was that we just continued to update it, and so you could read the story from the beginning to end. Whereas Twitter, sometimes you only have seen the latest or you haven't seen the latest. So that was pretty useful. We realized, you know, we were trying to figure out, you know, just to get in touch with everybody. In this situation, it didn't occur to us to only contact the people who'd been affected, partially because it was just such a big deal that we felt everybody needed to be contacted. And secondly, because we had to reset access tokens for Twitter for every single customer, even those who weren't affected. So ultimately, everybody was affected. I'm not really sure how we would have organized that if we had determined that we were only going to contact a subset, because we didn't really have that organization in place. But it was in that situation, it was very obvious that we were going to have to do all of those things. But yeah, I think they do vary in levels of severity. Putting a banner in the app and sending email to all customers was pretty extreme. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily do that unless you had something big to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Chase Livingstone, when it comes to Automattic, has there ever been a time where you've had to get these kind of like big updates out to customers right away? And it, you know, how did you get those updates out? Twitter, email, that, you know, what kind of channels?
Generally would use Twitter for that, possibly, you know, Facebook, as Carolyn said, but definitely Twitter. We have quite a few different accounts amongst the different teams at Automattic. And so we'd probably try to take over as many of those as we can to try to reach as many people, you know, as we possibly could with that information. You know, we have a couple of public IRC channels that we might use, as well, but definitely Twitter would be probably our go-to first.
Yeah. And I think Jeff at Wistia, right? Twitter, probably the first kind of go-to thing.
Actually, no. So we have a status.
Actually, did you not read Carolyn's post this week about using the word actually? I mean, come on.
Oh yeah. Come good on. Point. Although this wasn't meant negatively. So
yeah. So what's your kind of go-to thing there?
So actually, the first thing we use is, we use a status page update. And the reason why we do a status update first, okay. So a couple of reasons. First is, I actually think it's really important, and Carolyn, I guess, could disagree with me on this, but I think it's really important if let's say it's a technical issue, and we've tracked down the cause of it. It's really important for a developer or whoever is working on the problem to write out very clearly what the issue is and how we plan on resolving it. And the reason why that's important is, well, first of all, and like they may say, oh, I don't have time to do this. Like I really have to do this other thing, but it's actually kind of important to take the time to define the problem. It can help you like work through your solution mentally. But also for support people and for marketing people and for everyone in the company, they're about to be answering questions about this mega problem for the next day. I mean, Carolyn's still answering questions about something that happened in October. It's really, really important that she knows exactly what's going on and can speak like clearly about it and isn't kind of like surface level, like I'll get back to you on how you're affected type of thing. So writing that out and putting that in a status update, how we plan on fixing it, makes it so much easier for then you to write a like a Twitter update that points to the status update. And then for everyone in Help Scout who's asking about the problem, you can reply, hey, yes, there is an issue. Here's a link to the status page that's going to be updated constantly. And then you like tag it or use some sort of workflow to track that they are experiencing this issue. And what that allows us to do is really easily respond to everyone later when the issue has been resolved so that they know, right? So it makes it really easy for you to follow up with them later rather than replying kind of like ad hoc or like making it up as you go along with updates for everybody. And everybody who writes in into Help Scout is saying like, hey, can you like keep me up to date on this issue? Like, when is this going to be fixed? And instead just point everybody to one central place so you don't let anybody slip through the cracks. So status page is our first place to go. Wistia.com/status.
Nice. And slash status. Yeah, we're kind of the same way. So with Basecamp, if there's a big downtime event of any sizable nature, so customers can't get into it, we actually have an incident commander that starts. So like they'll be the person that is kind of not, they're not fixing the problem. They're at the top watching and making sure that other people are working on fixing the problem and they're maintaining the bigger picture. So we'll have our support team go to that person who will be able to explain to us, this is what's happening. Here's so-and-so that's looking at this and so-and-so is looking at that. And I'll have an update again for you in the next 10, 15 minutes or so, which really helps, you know, having one person who isn't head down and fixing the problem. They're kind of managing the problem rather than it managing us. Yeah, and status page is kind of the same with us too. It's one of those where I actually have a text expander snippet where if something goes down, then it's a preset snippet that basically says, yeah, this is a big thing. It's affecting everyone. Here's what we know so far. And oh, by the way, here's the status page where we'll have all the updates about this specific thing going on. So yeah, that's kind of what we do. And speaking of, you know, replying back to them, Chase Livingston, we'll start with you on this one. What kind of phrases should you avoid when talking with your customers about parts of your app being down? What things should you definitely not say? We'll start with not say and then kind of look at what things you should be saying. But which one should you avoid?
I mean, there's a lot of things probably that we could all list out that we should avoid. But, you know, something like kind of similar to what Jeff just said is, you know, don't be super vague. If at all possible, you know, let users know exactly what's going on. You know, when possibly they could expect to, see things back up. Don't try to pass blame as well. You know, take responsibility for what happened and, don't try to blame it on third parties unless it's, you know, the blame is due to them. But I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of things you should avoid as far as that goes, I would say.
Yeah. Carolyn, what do you think? Your Buffer is fantastic about being open and transparent and, you know, some of the emails that you've sent out, I've actually made notes on and be like, this is great kind of phrases to use. So what would be some of your, like, definitely don't ever say this when it comes to communicating with customers during a downtime event?
Yeah, this one stumped me. I don't think we have anything that you would never say. I agree wholeheartedly with Chase Livingston about taking the blame and not saying, oh, you know, pointing fingers. As an app that's built basically to help you use other apps, that can be a little bit tricky sometimes. you know, recently we had a situation where Twitter's API wasn't allowing photos to be uploaded through the API. So that means that Buffer is broken. Trying to upload. And like, it's really funny to try and explain that without like pointing fingers. But yeah, we've sort of practiced that and I don't think we've nailed it, but we always do try to uphold that one. I don't think there's anything that we wouldn't say. We try not to be, one thing that we try to do a little bit is just tone down the, I don't know how to say this, like adorableness of the writing. When
Adorableness. That's probably the best word to use for
you know,
how
like
you
when
write.
Somebody says like, "Hey, I'm not getting my reset password email," then you can be like, "What's up? Like, it's so great to talk to you. Like, thanks for using Buffer." When somebody's like really concerned about a billing issue or like worse, a downtime or hack issue, like that's not the time to be like, "Sup, guys." But that's like kind of the only thing I can think of. I'm not sure there's anything we would never say. We would just try and tell the truth.
And I should say on a side note, if you're not watching our video feed, it's worth it for when Carolyn's at home and standing at her desk, because there's lots of body language that goes into it as well. Jeff, this is, you know, Jeff, you and I were kind of chatting back and forth about some of the responses that we looked at in prep for this show. Was there anything that jumped out at you that was like, no, I would never, ever, ever say this?
Yes. I think that the question, the only thing I would say is that it's not about like a word that you would never use. It's more like Carolyn said, like there's a tone that you shouldn't use. And one thing you definitely, to me, you should never do is pretend like the issue is not a big deal, right? So saying something like only blank number of customers were affected may seem totally innocuous, right? And you may want to say something like, a very small percentage of customers were affected, but if you were affected, this is the worst thing in the world that could happen, and we understand that. Rather than saying only a few customers were affected, so it's no big deal, it's like for the people who were, they're like, "What? Okay, so I just lost in the lottery, right? I just got the crap lottery from your app, and you're saying it's no big deal. Like that really sucks for me, especially if their business might have been affected." So only is probably a bad word to use in that context, right? Only a few people, it was only down for 6 hours. It's like, 6 hours, crap, that's like my whole day. Other things that you should never say. I'm not sure that I can think of any off the top of my head. I'm more of an editor. You just give me a thing that says something dumb and I'm going to say, that's dumb, we shouldn't say that. What do you think, Chase?
I would say my two big ones, and having used an app that went down last week, that started with, "We sincerely apologize." Sincerely apologize just comes off as weird and corporate-y, right? I mean, we talk about don't say the word apologize or apology in our emails, so definitely don't do it when your app is down, just because it's weird. I don't know any other way to put that. So stay away from that. There was another that was in my notes. Hold on, I'm pulling up my notes that we're talking about. Oh, it was actually one that, yeah.
Is it we're sad to announce? I remember that one was weird.
That one was, so inconvenience is a, you know, just a dumb word that you never use. We're sad to announce. That one was great, Jeff, that you were pointing out earlier.
Hey, I like that one. What's wrong with that?
We're sad to announce?
I'm just thinking a whole room full of like Charlie Brown, like,
I think that song's fun. We're sad. This sucks.
Yeah, so say that, right?
Yeah, but
so
I don't know.
Come out
it's
and
the
say,
phrasing.
We're sad. We're super sad right now. We know this sucks. We're right there with you because we're using our app too. And when you can't use it, we can't use it. Just sounds a little bit more honest than we're sad to announce that such and such happened.
Announce is weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's announced, because I feel like announce might be something you use when someone dies. Like, we're sad to announce that someone's passed, right? Like, I think that's what I read in, like, obituaries. I don't know. It sounded really, the wording was very strange.
The other big one was, we understand how important something is, right? Like, we understand the importance of you
yes.
using our app. Well, no shit, Sherlock. That's why I use it. Like, just coming out and saying, we understand how important OLARC... That's where it came from. So I'll make sure to put the notes in that one. You know, we understand how important such and such is. If it wasn't important, I wouldn't be using it. And if it is important, I can't use it right now. So why are you telling me about how important this app is to me when it's down?
I love OLARC, so I'm sorry to pick on them. But you know what it was about that one for me? It was that instead of talking about the benefits of the service, they talked about themselves as being important, right? So instead of it being like, we know how important live chat is to you communicating with your customers, it was, we know how important we are to you. Yep. And it's like, no, you're actually not terribly important to me, but your functionality is because I've got it built into my product. Yeah.
That's a good distinction.
There. That's what would really get me about that thing.
Yeah, I was going to challenge Cake. I kind of think we know that this is a big, part in your day. We know that this is important. I don't know. I don't think that's bad either. I wish I was part of this discussion before the call.
Yeah, I think it's part of it. Like, the distinction that Jeff made is really great. The importance of the act that you're doing versus the importance of how you're doing it, the tool that you're using to do it. When we say things like, you know, picking up Basecamp here, if Basecamp was down and we said something like, we understand how important Basecamp is to you and your business, you know, it doesn't matter how important you are. Like, it's not working at the moment. And by putting the emphasis on how important Basecamp is, it kind of like, it puffs Basecamp up a little bit at that point and kind of puts it on a pedestal. Whereas if we said, you know, we understand how important communicating with your team is, it gives it a little bit of a softer tone. It gives it a little bit of a, you know, we really do get you. It's not all about us.
Yeah. And with the issue that Buffer experienced, it is a bummer that Buffer was down, but the biggest bummer is that like some of my personal info might've been compromised in some way. So you're bummed that like my personal info might be out there without my permission. Not that, you know, it's the buffer when it's your team, you shouldn't say something like we're so like bummed out that we've been working so hard on getting this fixed. It's more like, no, your day has been ruined. We get money from you in order to not have your day ruined. So we've let you down in the following way. I don't know. I think it's just important to keep the focus on what they're losing rather than that your business isn't working at full steam or something.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the time to use we is when you're talking about the cause and the fault. So like, I'm sorry that your day is ruined is not as good to me as we are sorry that we ruined your day. Because I think that's important to say, like, this isn't like, oh, your day was ruined in a vacuum. It's like, we caused this. And I think it's appropriate and powerful to use we or I in that sentence. But yeah, I totally agree that it's, I mean, we weren't like bummed that you couldn't use Buffer for 20 minutes. We were bummed that that you were feeling anxiety, that we had caused stress and interruption and that kind of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's all about empathy, right? It's you're really showing that you empathize with what's going on rather than just kind of this fake sense of sympathy and like, yeah, we're doing lip service. We know how important Basecamp is to you versus, you know, we really understand how critical what you do through Basecamp is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think maybe taking a second to understand what functionality, what a customer can't do because of the outage, and then like basing your whole message around that, right? Like if Wistia is down and you can still play your videos on your website, you just can't upload new videos or check your stats. Like, we should focus on those things when we're sending an email. Like, you know, for the next 24 hours, we don't think you'll be able to log into your account to upload new videos or check new stats. Not Wistia is going to be down for the next 24 hours. Like, and we're really bummed about that. I think that that sort of takes the customer's context and needs out of the messaging.
Yeah, and I think we've hit on to some like good language to use. So talking about things like, you know, we're super bummed. And when we say bummed, like, you have to be real careful with that. Carolyn was talking about this earlier. Like, you know, we're super bummed is still kind of like it's not jokey, it's not fun, but it's a little bit less serious than like, hey, you know, this sucks right now and we're sorry for that. So, you know, use language that is more colloquial that you would use with your customers anyways, but make sure that the kind of, it fits the seriousness of the situation too. Guys, you know, any other words that you would recommend using with these kind of emails?
Make sure to say you're sorry. I mean, especially if it's something that's your fault, that's an obvious one, but sometimes, you know, I've worked with companies in the past who kind of wish would have apologized for the trouble they caused me and just kind of seemed like they didn't really care.
Yeah, you know, kind of personal experience here. When we had those problems with Google Hangouts a couple of weeks ago, I remember getting an email that were like, hey, this happened and this is what we did to fix it. But there was no like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just apologizing. You know, when Chase, when you're doing live chat, have you ever had to, like, if a customer side is down, is it still kind of the same thing over live chat? Does any of the tone change just because it's a live chat experience at that point?
I think in a way live chat is almost even a little more, at least for me, in the way that we're trying to do it, is a little even more friendly and not informal kind of, it's more informal in a way. You know, I've had issues where they found a legitimate bug and there's, you know, it's not something that can be fixed, you know, within the next 15 minutes or something like that. And so, you know, just being honest and telling them that, you know, that we're sorry, that, you know, we'll try to follow up with them as soon as we can when we have something more to tell them. But it definitely does seem a little more informal just because it's such a quick back and forth rather than, you know, writing out like paragraph emails to each other.
Yeah. Carolyn, when, and I kind of keep going back toward everything that happened in October with the security breach and all that, just because that's kind of like one thing that I know you were all thinking about, the phrases and the words that we were using. Was there anything that kind of kept rising to the top that your team was like, hey, we need to make sure that we say this or that?
Yeah, I think Chase nailed it with, I'm sorry. That's a pretty key one. I also think, kind of to Jeff's point about like making the communication about the customer, like we did a lot of that feelings stuff, but it came second to here's what it means for you, and here's how you'll get more information. I think those are the two biggest things to focus on. Like here's what either steps you need to take or steps you don't need to take. Sometimes those can be equally important. Or just generally what it means for you and your account. And then obviously like what the next steps are, either stay tuned or we will communicate more with you, you know, by email, or, you know, usually stay tuned, I think, means like I'll probably still be in this channel, either like we'll email you back or we'll tweet again or whatever. But yeah, I think, Those are kind of the two things that I think it's important to keep in mind. If only for your own team sanity, because people are going to reply to the email if you don't answer the question anyway, and say, "So how does this affect me? And what do I do? And how do I get more information?" So yeah, but I'm sorry is probably the one that I would say, like across the board. Although we have been burned up for that, I have had people say, you know, I don't want to hear I'm sorry anymore from the Buffer team if I hear I'm sorry one more time, which is legitimate. I mean, you can only be sorry if you're really taking steps to fix it. And, you know, we have had people have 4 or 5 things go wrong in their account and they hear I'm sorry from us every time and it starts to lose its moves. But yeah, in a big situation like that, I'm sorry and here's what it means for you.
Yeah, so 3 big things: the I'm sorry, the here's what it means for you, and the here's the next steps that you need to take. I think if I got those 3, then I would move from like this limbo of not knowing what's going on into this area of now I know what's going on and I know my next steps, which gives me some actionable intel. Like I feel better when I know what to do next.
Yeah. If I could add one more thing, it's that probably for every app, there's some sort of data that's like really critical that they can't recreate because you own that data. And for us, even if it's a completely unrelated issue, mentioning that that data is safe is kind of important, especially if it sounds like it could somehow be related. People, you know, they don't necessarily have the mental models that we do about how our service works and how stuff is stored and how safe things are. Like they tend to think, okay, it's in like a gigantic grain mill, like Scrooge McDuck. And if it burns down, then is it all gone or what's the deal? So, we've definitely been burned. I've been burned specifically about, talking about an issue or an upgrade to an account or something like that. And people saying, yeah, so that's what it was. I said, we're going to upgrade your account because we're no longer, you know, doing this plan or something. So we're going to upgrade you for free. And people came back and they were like, oh my God, are our stats going to be safe? Like, do I have to re-upload all my videos? Like, oh my God, this is the worst day of my life. And it's like, whoa. I mean, we're talking about an account upgrade. There's nothing, no other changes need to be made. But in their world, right, there's a, maybe they've used something before where there is a transition period and an upgrade means everything's fresh and you have to start all over again. And just keeping in mind, like, the worst thing for them to possibly lose in, you know, in using your product or service, and just throwing in a quick note about how, you know, when Buffer had their security breach, like, no one is posting tweets that you don't want them to post. I don't even know if that was a thing, or like, none of your stats are going to go missing. Like, this is not a data issue. It's just, we need to track down these evil do-batters who are trying to break our service. Or like in Chase Livingston's case, it would be like, your blogs is safe. All your blogs about the Bluth family and Star Wars together.
Kittens.
Which is a blog I saw today and it was amazing.
Unicorns.
All those are safe. That would be a good thing to note, I think.
Yeah, so that's a good four, right? So I'm sorry. Here's what that means for you. Your data's safe. And here's your next steps. I think those are good, because remember, when the average person hears, you know, like you were mentioning earlier, Jeff, with the word upgrade, think about your worst experiences with an upgrade. I remember going from Windows XP to Windows Vista and lost everything, like absolutely everything. And there was no warning that was going to happen. Now, granted, Vista was a crappy OS anyways. But yeah, upgrade doesn't mean what we think it does to a lot of customers. So letting them know, hey, look, during this whole thing, your data's safe, you're going to be fine, goes a long way. Yeah. So last thoughts, anyone jump in now before we move into the next part? All right, Jeff, whenever you're ready. It's this week's shout outs. So this is the part of the show where we talk about things that have been just rocking our world, that are so fantastic it tops the Bluths meets Star Wars in a blog site. The things that are just so fantastic that we have to let you know about them. We're going to start with Chase Livingston. What are you shouting out this week?
I'm afraid it might be a little lame, but I just ordered it's a Fujitsu ScanSnap, the document scanner thing, and I'm pretty excited about it. I have a lot of extra paper lying around that I'm ready to digitize and get rid of to save some space.
This is the part where I want to like pull up the meme of the little stick guy and be like, scan all the things.
Yes, exactly. We'll be doing a lot of scanning around here.
Jeff Vincent, what are you shouting out this week?
So related to our show topic, I recently got set up with RunScope, and RunScope will run API requests for you and tell you if they fail against like some constraints or like variables that you set up. So I have all of the Wistia API flows going through RunScope, which means that every hour on the hour, we make sure that you can copy media and create a new project and pull down the stats for a media and all the great stuff that people want to do by API. And then if it fails, it tells us in HipChat. And we didn't used to have that. And so we would rely on someone reaching out and being like, hey, your API has been broken for like 4 hours. And yeah, hey, your API has been broken for 11 hours. Have you been sleeping? And we were like, we had no idea. And some people set up like their whole business or their entire website using our API. So RunScope, very easy to set up and runs on a schedule for you, which is wonderful.
Yeah, automate these checks. I think that like we should plaster that across something. I don't know. I'll find something to plaster it across. But automate all this stuff and have it flash warnings when things go wrong. And RunScope is an easy way to do it. Carolyn, what's your shout out for this week?
So my shout out is related to the fact that I spent a lot of time in a car this weekend, going to Tahoe and back in snow and traffic. I feel like this has been a shout out before, so I'm sorry, this is a repeat. But the TED iPhone app, there's only so much radio you can listen to, and conversation, who wants that? So we listened to TED videos for a large portion of the trip. And what's super cool, I'm going to have to read it because I know I'm going to get it wrong, is you can go to Inspire Me, which is a whole section of the app, and you can see something courageous, funny, persuasive, ingenious, jaw-dropping, beautiful, fascinating, informative, or inspiring, which is a pretty awesome list to choose from. So I recommend it.
That just sounds like it would be... And I have no words for like what service it might be like or anything like that. But I think, I don't know, I would be excited by picking something at random from a TED Talk and being like, hey, let's listen to this for a while. So making that just easier would rock. Yeah, as we all just shake our heads. Oh, that brings me to my shout out for this week. It's one of those where every now and then I'll download a game that my wife recommends and get frustrated with said game and then end up deleting said game because I can't beat her high scores. And we've been doing that with an iPhone and iPad app game called Threes. Have any of you played this yet?
No, but I've
Threes, like the number three. It sounds so simple. Like it's kind of math, right? So you have these tiles and you move the tiles in ways that pushes them together. So you like have a one and a two and you move them together to make a three. And then you put two threes by each other and then push them together to make a six. And then you take two sixes, push them together to make a 12. And that's how you get points. You just keep kind of adding these numbers together. And it sounds super simple. And I look online and I see people with like 7,000 points and 10,000 points and 30,000 points. And I'm sitting here with my measly 3,000 points that I can't get any farther past as my wife just totally blows me out of the water on the game. So I deleted it this week, but it is a great game that you should play until you get frustrated and delete it.
That's an awesome ending for that.
It's fun until you get frustrated. But you might be better than me. Like, my wife is better than me at this game. So check it out. It's called Threes. It's a lot of fun. So with that, this hangout's in the books. I'll have show notes up shortly, supportops.co. Just a huge thanks again to our awesome panel. We've made some changes over the last week, and we've got some other changes in mind that we're talking about, and they have been fantastic to work with me on all of it. So just thanks again for all these, this wonderful lady and wonderful gentleman that we've got on the show. I'm Chase, and until we see you again next week, have an awesome week.